are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Hold on a second. You love Ivory? You know, he hasn't had 10 fantasy points in one game all year. We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'd like to wish him a happy 54th birthday, and hopefully his, hips are getting, treated and all that stuff. I know he can't barely walk at this point.
Man, I really should prepare for this podcast, huh?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The reason why we're recording this on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern is because I had to watch Survivor from 8 to 9.
And just,
Winston's mature?
At MLB, I thought I was the only person allowed to fuck Justin Verlander.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 92 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and with me today is reality TV aficionado, Eli Rosenzweig. What's up, buddy?
Oh, wow. Thanks for the kind introduction. Thanks for letting all the listeners know that I'm a complete... I can't even talk. That I'm a complete loser. I'm sure they already knew that, but, whatever.
You're a little rusty. It's okay. And you're not a complete loser. I know a lot of gentlemen like yourself that love some reality TV. What's going on in Survivor, by the way? I know you love Survivor more than anything.
Yeah,
is it over yet?
The reason why we're recording this on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern is because I had to watch Survivor from 8 to 9. It's every season is good. Even bad seasons are good. This is an average season, I'd say. All my favorite players seem to be getting voted out, but I'm still enjoying the hell of it.
Are you still watching Big Brother? I'm a big Brother fan. Big Brother fan. but I didn't watch the record or above the... I don't even know what it's called. But
Big Brother Over the Top. It's so depressing. I have been watching only the weekly Wednesday episodes that they've been putting out online. It's just like everyone is so miserable. Everyone on there hates each other. Everyone's so rude and like they're all hypocritical assholes. It's really disheartening, honestly.
So it's kind of like Real World, except for on CBS.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit.
Well, like you've already kind of mentioned, we're doing this a day early because of schedules and stuff like that. Justin Mason, our own Justin Mason, it's his birthday today. So I'd like to wish him a happy 54th birthday, and hopefully his hips are getting treated and all that stuff. I know he can't barely walk at this point. So happy birthday to Justin. Hopefully he's having a nice – I know he's going to give me a ton of shit after he listens to this, but happy birthday to him. And – yeah, we're just going to kind of go through the games a little early. I know we don't have all of the injury information for this week, so that's kind of the downfall of doing it at this point. But before we get into it, I do just want to mention this. I know people listening to this aren't necessarily baseball fans, but I'm assuming every man is a Kate Upton fan, right? And if you don't know, Justin Verlander is, I think they're married at this point now. They're not. Or are they just
together? Not, I don't even think they're engaged. I think they're just together.
Well, okay. Either way, obviously.
They're just having some fun.
They're having a lot of fun, and they're very close-knit. So today we heard who the Cy Young Award winners were, and Justin Verlander lost to Rick Porcello, and part of that was because two of the writers just completely left Verlander off the ballot. And he would have won, but because of that, he ended up losing to Porcello. And Kate Upton had some choice tweets. So I'm going to go through a series of tweets that she had. The first one was, hey, at MLB, I thought I was the only person allowed to fuck Justin Verlander. What two writers didn't have him on their ballot? I'd say that is a...
Oh, my God. That is amazing.
I'd say that's an amazing start. It arguably gets better. So tweet number two. He had the majority of the first place votes, and two writers didn't have him on their ballots. !! Can you pick more out of touch people to vote at MLB? Another choice one. Number three. Sorry, Rick, but you didn't get any first place votes. You didn't win. Bye, Felicia. At MLB, keep up the times and fire those writers. And then the last one was a retweet from Ben Verlander, who I'm assuming is his brother.
Yep.
But essentially, it was. It was a, are you kidding me? Most first place votes and doesn't win. Salty younger brother, explain this. And it's a graph kind of comparing all of the Cy Young candidates between Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, Verlander, and Porcello was one of them on there. But I just wanted to kind of open up with that because if that's not loyalty, I don't know what is. And it's pretty amazing to be able to read that once I got home from work. So.
The first tweet was fantastic, but she kind of ruined it by the rest. The first tweet is just like... It was really great and really funny and just like something you wouldn't expect. But when she kept going, she just came across pretty salty and like kind of immature about it. So she kind of lost me there, but it's still good stuff.
Well, she certainly could have stopped on the first one. You know, like, I'm the only one allowed to fuck Justin Verlander. Like, that's probably up there in terms of best tweets of all time. Like, I'm just
it certainly was pretty amazing. Yes, I agree. That was a great tweet.
Anyways, that was kind of our non-football little segment of the week, but let's dive into some games. As usual, please rate and review the podcast. Every rating and review really helps us out. It helps us go up the board, so please help us out. You can follow Eli, at EliFWFB? Is that what it is nowadays?
That is correct.
You can follow me on Twitter at MikeWernerFWFB. With that, let's kind of get into this thing. The first matchup we have is the Steelers and the Browns. Eli, what do you want to talk about from this game?
Man, I really should have prepared for this podcast, huh? Browns. Well, the only thing that really interests me is Pittsburgh's run defense is pretty bad. Do you trust Isaiah Crowell at all? Or is he the flex guy, or are you willing to put him in your RB2 discussion? Because that's one question I'm wrestling with in one of my leagues. I don't know what to do with him. Like, I just feel like it's a great matchup, but he just doesn't get enough touches to be relied upon whatsoever.
Well, this season's been kind of a bloodbath at running back, so I think that there's certainly a case to be made to start him this week. I'm trying to figure out where I ranked him as I'm kind of talking here. I ranked him as a running
back. You have him at 17.
Yeah, so I put a lot of time in my rankings, and I think that at 17, that's not the worst spot in the world. If you have a few other guys, if you're feeling a little better about Doug Martin, who I have behind him right now, I also have a guy like CJ Procise behind Isaiah Crowell as well. I would actually feel more comfortable starting Procise. We'll kind of get into the other games here, but regardless, Crowell is getting a good amount of touches. It's the last couple of weeks have been bad, but that's also kind of game script related as well. But at least go ahead.
I don't know. I just feel like it's been a little bit of Duke Johnson mixed in there too, so he's not getting a huge amount of touches. And also, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Like, don't you think Pittsburgh is going to get up early and big, and then that limits the carries even further? I just really worry about that.
Well, I'm kind of basing it off of Hugh Jackson, too. Hugh Jackson, earlier this week, I believe Monday, pretty much said, like, I want to get back to the ground and pound game at the beginning and kind of continuing to have it go throughout the tilt. So I think that they're going to turn back to – I mean, if you look at the first 5 weeks of the season, he got double-digit carries. What I really like, too, even though the last 5 weeks he only has two games with double-digit carries, he's had two or more receptions in every one of those last five games, and three or more in three of the four and three of the five. So he's at least adding some extra yards and some extra receptions there, which is kind of helping you out in PPR leagues. I think that this is going to be a situation. Pittsburgh, they're kind of up and down, back and forth in terms of their defense. I think that at some weeks I watch them and I'm like, yeah, they can stop anybody, and then other times I feel like they're possibly the worst in the league. Their league average against running backs this season, I think that this is a appropriate spot to put Crowell as a running back too. I do like your point that most of the time Pittsburgh, especially against the Cleveland team, will have the advantage of getting up probably 21-0 early, and then having to have Cleveland reverse their game script. But Pittsburgh's given up over 100-yard rusher in three of the last 4 weeks. I think that they're just kind of a middling team in that aspect, and I think Cleveland will probably try their best to get the ground game established and try and keep it as tight as they can.
Fair enough, buddy.
With Pittsburgh, Ladarius Green, he's kind of coming back into the fold here, and you already kind of know who you're starting from this game. There's not much really to say, but I think if there's anybody I'm kind of buying from the Pittsburgh pass game, it's going to be Ladarius Green. If there's a pass catcher other than the tight ends, I guess it's Eli Rogers, but Sammy Coates has had problems with his two broken fingers. Marcus Wheaton is injured, and you have Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell just kind of getting the majority of all the touches. So that's why I'm just kind of saying, I'm to hell with the wide receiver twos here. I'm just going to kind of look for Ladarius Green if I'm going to make a high upside stash on this team for the rest of the way, because Pittsburgh, I mean, they're going to try and get into the playoffs here. They're not going to sit here and just try and dilly-dally around. And the best way that they can do that is by trying to pass as much as they can and feed Le'Veon Bell and kind of use play action and stuff like that. So I think Ladarius Green, based on talent alone, is worth a pickup. Definitely in deeper leagues, but with tight end being the way it is this season, I think that he is worth an add pretty much in any size league, besides 10 teamers at this point.
Do you think they're going to ease him back in a little bit, especially because they got Jesse James, who's been pretty solid?
Well, yeah, he already got eased in last week. You know, that's green. So, yeah, he is going to get eased in. But the thing is like, Pittsburgh's okay with running two tight end sets at times, too. And having the injuries on the, you know, the wide receiver front, I think gives a, you know, at least a path to more playing time for Green. It, you know, he wasn't ready really last week in terms of being 100% healthy. And we might not see him 100% healthy at all this season or even until, you know, what, week 14, week 15, somewhere in there. But based on, you know, his athleticism, he's the one guy that I would feel, you know, at least okay about adding as a speculative play for the rest of the year going into the fantasy playoffs. Because, I mean, just if you haven't looked at the tight end ranks this year, it's beyond dreadful. It's beyond worse than it's been in the past. You know, Martellus Bennett is still in the top five at tight ends just because of one good week, literally one good week. So I think that he's worth an ad. Eli, do you want to pick these games or you just want to kind of move on? I know Justin does the...
I hate doing this. I have spent zero time researching picking the games. Let's just move on. There's a lot of games to get to.
There is a lot of games to get to. Justin puts out his Against the Spread article every Sunday, so be sure to check that out. I believe he's up to, what, 65% winning percentage. So if you're a gambling man, then go and check out Justin's article every week. I do just want to mention on the pass catcher side for the Browns that I still am buying Corey Coleman. I don't think that anybody should drop him quite yet. He's still kind of getting used to things, and he didn't have much time with Cody Kessler to start the season. So be a little bit patient with him, and Terrell Pryor continues to be a wide receiver too. I will just the last thing on this game is the Steelers' Casey Hayward is going to be out for the season, which is a massive blow to their defense, which is kind of another reason why I think Crowell could be all right. All right, let's go to the Jaguars and Lions. Eli, let's see. I'll talk about the Lions, and first and foremost, I'll talk about Marvin Jones. I have seen him, you know, get offered in a ton of trades and a ton of the leagues that I've been in, and I'm just not interested. I consider Marvin Jones to be a wide receiver three, maybe even a wide receiver four the rest of the way. Golden Tate is just kind of taking over in terms of the target share for this team, and I just, other than Golden Tate and pretty much, you know, Theo Riddick at this point and Matthew Stafford, I'm just kind of not really trusting any Lions player. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Tate's getting a lot of looks. I think Ebron's had back-to-back seven catch games or something like that. So yeah, it's inconsistent from week to week. I know he had the two big weeks early in the season, but he's pretty much done jack shit the last six games. So, you know, he could certainly have another big game here and there, but you can't consistently rely on him, and it's really starting to piss me off because I have him in both of the leagues I'm in this year. So fuck you, Marvin Jones.
Well, I left out Ebron, and if I'm making the case, or if I'm making a choice between Ebron and Ladarius Green, I'm picking up Ebron if he's available because he was on bye last week. Ebron is a very, very talented guy, and you know, you're right about the targets. He's gotten 8 and 10 targets in each of the last two games that he's played in. The Detroit team needs somebody down the middle of the field. Anquan Boldin's fine and nice and everything, but he's always going to only get like 3 or 4, you know, touches a game. He's not the type of guy that can get a ton of volume and do anything with that. So the last two games for Detroit, we've seen Ebron get 18 catches and 14 receptions. So really good efficiency there. No touchdowns quite yet, which is why you might see him available in some formats. But at least with Marvin Jones, I'm looking at him as a wide receiver three the rest of the way, maybe a wide receiver four, and that's about it. If you want to look at Detroit's schedule as a possible saving grace, they get Chicago in week 14 in the playoffs, and then they get the Giants in week 15, who have been playing much better to date, and then they get Dallas in week 16, and we kind of all know how that might work out. So what do you think about this game, Eli?
I don't know. Jacksonville is really boring to me. It's like Ivory and fucking Yeldon like eat into each other. Neither of them all that good. Bortles is like a good QB2, but you're not thrilled if you have to start him at QB1. Allen Robinson seems to be back, so that's encouraging, but they pretty much got nothing else. Julius Thomas is whatever. So it's pretty much Allen Robinson's the only guy you want right now from this crappy-ass Jaguars team.
Yeah, but I'm not really even that interested in Robinson, because if you look at their playoff schedule, you got Minnesota in week 14, Houston and A.J. Boye, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, in week 15, who's been the number one cover corner in PFF. And then in week 16, you got Tennessee. And, you know, maybe that's an okay game. But regardless, this is not a good schedule for Jacksonville the rest of the way. I actually kind of like Marquise Lee from Jacksonville. Allen Hurns has continually been inconsistent. We don't know what to really expect from him. But Marquise Lee is the type of guy here that, you know, can at least make a splash in PPR leagues. No, he's not overwhelmingly talented, and he's not somebody that kind of jumps off the page at you. But he's gotten, you know, 8 or more targets in 2 of the last 4, and then he had 6 in one of those other other games as well. So I think that he has at least a possibility of being all right in PPR leagues if you want to go that route. I love Ivory, but my problem with him is that the game scripts can just get so out of hand for Jacksonville. I mean, if they have the opportunity to run Ivory, then of course I want to, kind of get my paws in on that. But as far as this Jacksonville team goes,
hold on a second. You love Ivory? You know, he hasn't had 10 fantasy points in one game all year. Get out of here.
No, I love Ivory as a player, though. In the past, coming to Jacksonville this year, I thought that he would be a pretty solid goal line back for them, and it just hasn't worked out. A, because he's gotten injured, which we still don't know what he actually – I believe it was an illness he had earlier this year, and we still don't know what that was. But, if you're looking at Ivory from a value sense the rest of the way, you have to put him at what? Maybe a flex option? Maybe?
Not even that. I mean between the two guys, Ivory and Yeldon, Yeldon's had the three highest fantasy outputs. I mean, you can't count on either of them, but if anyone's going to do something, it's probably going to be Yeldon.
Sure. I think that, we're not really talking much about this game as opposed to, the season as a whole. But, at least for this game, I don't mind starting Ivory. The Detroit defense has been pretty mediocre this season, especially the defense as far as the secondary goes. They might get DeAndre Levy back this week, but at the same time, it's not like they're going to play him a full complement of snaps. But this is a really good game for the pass, or a really good matchup for the pass catchers here. And you still could probably get some flex value out of Ivory and Yeldon for this week, just long term.
No. Please don't play those guys. Lions only allowed one rushing touchdown all year.
Yeah, but they allow a ton of yards, and they're not particularly talented, and mainly that's because they're playing in game scripts where the other team doesn't have to really rush the ball a ton. They have to run, or they have to pass. I'm sorry.
I just think the Lions rush defense is decent, and these guys are not getting a lot of work. They're both getting 8 carries a game. You have to pray for a touchdown. I don't like putting in running backs that you have to pray for a touchdown. I like putting running backs that I know are going to get touches, and if they don't score a touchdown, so be it. They'll at least get me 7 points. And you can't count on 7 points with these two guys.
You starting Thomas Rawls then over Chris Ivory this week?
Oh, yeah, I would. I wouldn't be pumped about starting Rawls because I think Procise is going to get a lot of work. And obviously Rawls has been banged up all year, but I'd rather put Rawls in.
Yeah, I have Rawls ranked just a couple notches ahead. But, regardless, we still have a few bye weeks here. I think Ivory is worth a play. You have him ranked right there as well, right at 32. So it's not it's outlandish to have him as a flex play this week. But regardless, let's move on to the next game. Let's move on to your team, the 8-1 Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo, by the way, gave probably the most stand-up, respectable, just – he probably went up probably 10 notches to me as far as a human being. Tony Romo did with that speech that he gave earlier this week, just pretty much saying I really want to play right now. The fire to play has never been hotter than now, but Dak Prescott has earned this job, and we're 8-1 because of it. I wish him nothing but the best. I mean, he went on for about 5 minutes, but what an amazing guy Tony Romo is to kind of look at things that way. Even if he's not really looking at it that way, and he's being kind of an asshole about it. I didn't see that at all in his press conference, but from a fantasy angle here, I mean, what is there really to say about the Dallas Cowboys and really about Zeke Elliott, who right now should be the MVP if we were going to do it today?
And don't get me started on Romo. I've been saying this for 10 years on this guy. He's a class act. He's done nothing bad in his – he's always been good. He's always been a stand-up guy. People shit on Romo all the time for no reason whatsoever, and it fucking drives me crazy. I love Romo. I'm the biggest Romo fan ever, but even I think that Prescott should be starting right now, so –
From a non-fantasy perspective, do you think Tony Romo gets traded this offseason, and where do you think he goes?
That's a tough one. I could see a team like the Jets maybe being desperate to get a good quarterback. I just the contract. I don't know. I'm not I don't know how the contract thing works. I know he's got a shit ton of guaranteed money coming. I don't know how a trade would work if the other team would be on the hook for 100% or how that works. But I just... So he's going to be 37 next year. He's going to have a shit ton of money owed to him. He's got a lot of injury problems the last couple of years. But it only takes one team desperate enough to do it, and I could probably see that happening with someone like the Jets.
There's a ton of teams that this could end up, you know, going. He could end up going to. My sleeper team is this, though. I mean, I know Chicago could use a quarterback. Miami could use a quarterback. Cleveland could use a quarterback. You know, even Minnesota if they wanted to go that route. But my sleeper team, and you know, tell me if I'm just being crazy
Denver?
Here. No, Arizona. I think that it's a perfect fit in Arizona. You got a guy that loves to stretch the field in Bruce Arians. Carson Palmer can barely throw it anymore. And we'll get to that game too, but I just feel like it's a perfect fit. A great coach, a quarterback that, you know, he can protect, even though the offensive line's been absolutely horrible for Arizona this year. But I think it's a match made in heaven.
That would be great for Tony. I do have him in Dynasty, so that'd be fine with me if that were to happen. But
let's get to the game, though. There's not much to really say on the Cowboys side. You're starting Dez. You're starting Dak, really, if you want to go there. And then you're also starting, you don't even have to say you're starting Zeke. Alfred Morris is a 100% somebody that should be a handcuff, though, if you are, you know, kind of using your bench spots, which you should be, for handcuffs the rest of the way. You want to make sure that you have, you know, people behind some of your stars. That way, if something happens to them, you can, you know, place them in. But on the Ravens side of things, we're seeing a kind of a change in the guard with Terrence West and Kenneth Dixon. Would you try and make a move forward to Kenneth Dixon if you could at this point, or are you just kind of letting the situation go?
Yeah, I do think things are trending Dixon's way, and I think he could have a good second half here, but I'm not all that optimistic it's going to be on a consistent basis. I don't really think Dallas' defense is good. I know they're 8-1. I know they're not giving up a ton of points, but it's just because they're on the field so long every game, so they're minimizing the stink on their defense. I think this could be a good game for Dixon. I don't have much faith in West anymore. In Dynasty, I drafted Dixon over Procise. I'm kind of regretting that. I know it's just one big game from Procise, but he seems to be a lot better than Dixon so far.
You know what's funny is I remember you asking me that question prior to the season starting, you know, Procise versus Dixon, and I still don't necessarily go Procise. I understand Procise is getting a massive workload now, but if things kind of turned out differently and Kenneth Dixon didn't get injured at the beginning of the season, I think we might have been singing a really different tune. So I still think you made the right decision, you know, when it's all said and done there. We'll kind of see how it goes. But really, I think that both of them are kind of just whatever to me. I've kind of been mentioning this to Justin as the weeks have gone on. I just don't love their schedule, Baltimore's the rest of the way, especially for running backs. There's just not a lot for me to like here. And, you know, honestly, as much as Dixon is more talented than West, and I still firmly believe that, you know, he's starting to eat into the touches, but he's not getting a full workload. He's not getting red zone looks. If he couldn't really do much against Cleveland in week 10, are we really going to be able to expect him to do much against Philadelphia in week 15 or New England in week 14? I mean, the only time that you might feel comfortable starting somebody like Kenneth Dixon the rest of the season is either in week 13 against Miami or in week 16 in your fantasy championship against Pittsburgh. And I'm just not willing to hold on to a guy like that. So I'm just kind of out on both of them. I think barring health, both of them are going to kind of eat into each other's workload the rest of the way. But regardless, you're going to be starting Mike Wallace, and we already talked about the Dallas guys. We'll talk about Jason Witten really fast. Are you buying what he's been doing these last few weeks? Do you consider him a top 10 tight end the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think he's borderline. Certainly encouraging what he's been doing the last couple weeks after kind of not really being a factor for a while. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Prescott's a rookie, and he's not looking to go deep down the field all the time, so he needs kind of a safety valve, and Witten is one of the best safety valves in the history of football, so it does make some sense that he's having a little bit of a resurgence here. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's pretty safe to get you 5 points or so. I mean, he's not likely to get in the end zone a whole lot, I don't think. I know he has been lately, but I'm not sure that's going to continue.
Yeah, I think that it's going to continue to a point, right? Like, he continually gets targeted because Dak Prescott loves to use the middle of the field. But we've also seen what's really encouraging about this whole thing is, I can't even believe I'm talking positively about Witten, who I've pretty much just written off the last couple of seasons. But, you know, he's gotten 18 targets the last 2 weeks, even with Dez Bryant on the field. Combined 14 receptions on those. That's amazing. That's amazing efficiency, and it's amazing the workload. So I think that Witten is going to be a top 10 tight end the rest of the way. And, Dak Prescott as well is going to be a top 10 quarterback the rest of the way. You and I were kind of chatting prior to the start of the show about some schedules that we're targeting the rest of the way. And Dallas is right on that list. They, in their fantasy playoffs, they have Detroit in the week 16 championship week, where they have Tampa Bay in week 15, and then they have the Giants in week 14. 2019, the worst of those matchups being the Giants. So I think that Dallas has one of the premier schedules the rest of the way. I would buy any Dallas player I really can, if it's even possible at this point.
Can I point out real quick that Terrence West's last 44 carries, he's got 96 yards.
Yeah, it's so bad.
It's kind of Dixon time, man.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is like, even as bad as West has been, there's just some teams offensive line wise I just don't want to mess with. Like, Arizona being one of them, and also Seattle being one of them. Like, the reason that Christy Michael was getting released, or got released, in my opinion, is solely because of that offensive line. I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think we'll see much better from Thomas Rawls. And if we do, then, you know, I don't know what to really say there. But, Seattle is 24th in run blocking this year, and has, you know, been mediocre in terms of pass protecting as well. Like, their offensive line is just as bad as it was last season, and I don't see any real room for them to improve. Same thing, you know, in this sense. I just don't feel like Baltimore has the opportunity. I mean, Baltimore is 26th in offensive line run blocking this season. It doesn't matter how talented you are if your offensive line doesn't give you any holes. Part of the reason, I'm not saying it's the full reason, but part of the reason Zeke is as good as he is because Dallas has an elite front seven. And when you have an elite front seven, you're able to do a lot of things. And when you combine that with somebody of the talent of Ezekiel Elliott, it ends up, you know, manifesting into what we've been seeing. So that's the reason I just don't really care for West or Kenneth Dixon. But you're right. I mean, West's output has been getting worse and worse as the weeks have gone on. And let's not forget, he got cut by the Cleveland Browns and the Titans.
That's a good point.
Speaking of the Titans, let's move on to the Titans and the Colts. What's your takeaway from this game, and what is up with Marcus Mariota? Is he the GOAT of quarterbacks?
I want to know why you hate him so much. And I used to have arguments with Justin last year all the time about Mariota. He just wouldn't believe in any of the production. But he's doing it. He's doing it at a high level. And I've been saying forever that I'd take Mariota over Winston. And I know that's a hot button issue for you. But where do you stand on that one?
Well, that's kind of part of the reason, right? Because, you know, the Buccaneers finally ended up drafting a quarterback, you know, last season, and I wanted it to be Winston since day one, and I still believe that Winston is the better quarterback. The reason why is because he just makes better progressions downfield, and he's just more ready, and he's younger. You know, I mean, to be that mature, that good of a leader, and just, you know,
Winston's mature? That's a new one.
Well, he's been mature on a football field. I understand all the college shit, and I get it. You know, I will completely cop to that. That's absolutely true. All that shit that he did in college. But in terms of what he's done as a pro, nothing but glowing reports about his leadership, and nothing but glowing reports about how he makes his progressions and how good he is for how young he is. So regardless, I think that Winston is my guy as we're talking on, you know, November 16th, 2016. But I will say this about Mariota. I did not like the way that he looked for progressions. I felt like he was a, you know, drop it, and that he's either going to run or he's going to hit his first read. What he's done though this year is just he's gotten so much better in a very short amount of time. In fantasy, since week five, he is the number one quarterback. And it's not, I mean, it's a bit close to Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, he has 170 points since then. I mean, he's only had three interceptions in those six games, elite numbers there. I mean, the efficiency's gotten better. The rushing yards, he has almost 200 rushing yards in that time. That's second amongst any quarterback in that time frame as well. Two rushing touchdowns, that's also second or tied for second. I mean, he's just blazing. Blazing hot. And in terms of what you can look for the rest of the way, I mean, I think he's a quarterback one. Let's look at our ranks for this week. We have Mariota. I have Mariota at six. You have him at five. And no other ranker has him outside of seven. And that's Justin, because he just hates Mariota for reasons that are still unknown at this point. But the reason that I hated him at the beginning was just because there was so much talk in Tennessee about he was going to be their savior, this, that, or the other. Jameis Winston is trash. Thank God we didn't get Winston. And it was kind of just me not liking the fact that everybody was hating on Winston. Not as much me not liking Mariota.
Fair enough. There's not much else that really interests me in this game.
You're
starting the quarterbacks. Now, I was going to ask you about the fringe receivers on these teams. Do you think Moncrief's about to break out a little bit here now that he's healthy? He's got two straight games with touchdown.
Oh, Moncrief's an absolute buy for me.
absolute buy. I've been trying to buy him on the low the last few weeks, and I've gotten a couple people to actually do it. There's still a few people out there that kind of remember things here, but since he's come back, you know, 9 and 6 targets, and then they had their buy here, that's great. You know, he's had 2 touchdowns in that time as well. People kind of forget how good he really was with Andrew Luck last season, and then he's kind of continuing that this year. Whenever Moncrief actually gets a full year with Andrew Luck, and God forbid if they actually had an offensive line that could pass protect, he could be a really special wide receiver, possibly a top 10 to top 12 guy if things kind of shook out right for him. So I love me some Moncrief, and I'm completely willing to buy if people are willing to sell at this point. Let's look at their Indianapolis schedule the rest of the way. In weeks 14 through 16, you do have a bad matchup in week 15 against Minnesota in Minnesota there, but you have Houston week 14, another bad matchup, but he's also, this is something that I'd like to bring up, is that Moncrief's the second wide receiver here. He doesn't always get the top corner. So AJ Boye and Xavier Rhodes and company over there in Minnesota might not necessarily be matched up to Moncrief, which yields to, you know, him having more and more chances. And then Oakland in week 16. So I'm buying Moncrief just solely alone because he gets Oakland in week 16. You also have the Jets in week 13 as well. Like some really, really good matchups here. So I love me some Moncrief the rest of the way. Hilton's still going to be a top 12 guy, but there's really no other pass catchers here that I'm really digging. I mean, Jack Doyle is still a top 10 to 12 tight end just because of sheer volume alone. But
I wish Dwayne Allen didn't exist, because I feel like Doyle would get even more work.
I wish Dwayne Allen would just either stay healthy or go to another team. Dwayne Allen's done to me. You know, until he moves on, I'm just kind of done with him in fantasy. There's not much to really say there. But Derrick Henry is another one of those running backs that you want to have on your, as a kind of a flyer in case something happens to DeMarco Murray. He did not practice today being
that's
Wednesday.
That's an elite handcuff right there. I'm not a big handcuff guy, but that's
arguably the most elite handcuff you could possibly have. So Derrick Henry returned after a short absence. I believe he was supposed to be out for a couple weeks, and he's made it back from that calf string rather quickly. So no worries here on the Derrick Henry front. Do just want to mention on the wide receiver front for the Tennessee Titans here, like, you can't really ask for more than what they've been doing. I don't think that I buy fully what Rishard Matthews has done these last few weeks. I mean, he has 6 touchdowns over the last 6 games that he's played. But we have seen him get 7 or more targets in 2 of the last 4. He only got 5 targets last week against Green Bay, but they kind of spread the ball out, Tennessee did, in that particular matchup. So you can't really take a lot from that. But regardless, Rishard Matthews has at least put himself on the map to be a wide receiver 3 or 4 going forward. Tajay Sharpe isn't anything, and you know, Kendall Wright has, you know, made a little bit of a splash, but he's not enough for you to really bank on week in and week out. So if I'm going to buy anybody other than Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray on a consistent basis, is going to be Derrick Henry, and then maybe a little bit of Rishard Matthews in there as well.
It's impressive what Mariota's doing, considering his 3 receivers are just, you know, they're fine. They've got some talent, but they're not that special.
They're not that fine. No, they're really not. I mean, Rishard Matthews is okay. Like, he was...
Yeah, I don't know. These 3 guys, like, they're good to have on your team in real life. Like, but if you're relying on them to be your 1, 2, 3, these should be like your 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 5 kind of guys. That I really wish they had an elite receiver to go with Mariota, but I mean, they do have Delanie Walker, who is a fucking stud. I got him as my number 1 tight end this week. I love Delanie Walker.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to pick the game, so going from the Tennessee Titans and moving on, speaking of Jameis Winston, to my Buccaneers, facing the Chiefs this week. The Chiefs, just a couple of notes for them. They will be getting back Justin Houston, according to, you know, multiple practice reports. He is back, and you know, he almost made it back last week, but it looks like he is for sure going to play in this matchup against the Bucs. On the other end of things, though, Marcus Peters is looking like he is questionable. He ended up missing practice Wednesday. Again, this is kind of the downfall of, you know, talking about this now as opposed to doing it more on Thursday, Friday area. If I had to bank on it, I would say that I think Peters does play, but we don't know for sure if that's going to happen. So kind of keep your ears peeled to this information and see what's going on. Regardless, you have Mike Evans, who a lot of Tampa Bay people are very upset at right now for making his protest and kneeling during the national anthem last week due to the way the you know, political voting has gone in recent weeks. So a lot of Buccaneer people and fans are upset with him. Regardless, if we're talking just fantasy, he is still a top five wide receiver, no questions asked. And Doug Martin, if we're going to talk about it on the you know, running game front, he got 16 touches last week, still scored. I don't think many people started him, but he is going to be, you know, based on the running back landscape as a whole, he is a running back one moving forward, especially since the Buccaneers, another one of those teams that Eli and I talked about prior to the show starting, get New Orleans two of the last 3 weeks in the fantasy playoffs. So you have to love those matchups for Martin. If you don't even love what he's doing, you know, as of right now, you can at least try and buy him for those matchups. So anything to add here, Eli, on the, you know, Kansas City front, other than that Alex Smith has taken an even more strongward downward spiral these last couple of weeks?
This is a pretty boring game. I mean, for the most part, you're just starting the running backs and you know, you're starting Evans and Macklin if he's healthy, and, you know, you probably roll with those tight ends.
Wait a minute. Are you starting Macklin if he's healthy? Because, like, I don't know. I don't know in any world how you can start Macklin in any format.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I spoke too soon. The only thing that really interests me here is if Macklin doesn't play, like, does Tyreek Hill interest you? Because he's a big play guy. He's had you know, three of the last four games, he's been double digits. He's scoring a bunch of touchdowns even when he doesn't get a lot of looks. So this guy could have a big game.
Absolutely. The Bucs are allergic to, and that's a great call that I just didn't really think of off the top of my head. But Tyreek Hill is an absolute stud when he gets in the open field. And the Buccaneers, if you haven't watched them play defense, they just don't know how to do it. They also don't know how to tackle. So Tyreek Hill is an amazing DFS play this week. He's an amazing regular season play as well for fantasy, just because of, you know, the fact that the Buccaneers yield so many points to the wide receiver position. It's kind of gross how many yards and just extra points that they allow. Buccaneers giving up a league worst 27 fantasy points per game to the wide receiver position. You have to at least consider the possibility of starting Tyreek Hill. I mean, I think that he's a worthy pickup. I still don't think a lot of people have him in many formats. I'm going to check up on his ownership in ESPN leagues, but seemingly to me, not a guy that's getting enough hype and not a guy that's getting nearly enough ownership. He's only at 14% ownership in ESPN fantasy leagues. I think that's insane.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's definitely a guy you want to get. He's certainly on the rise here, and you know, he's one of the few playmakers they have, so they've got to try to get him as many looks as possible.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just going to look at Macklin for a second, you know, weeks 1 through 10 last year for Macklin, he was, let's see, I'm trying to find him, but he was at least a wide receiver 2 at this point. He was a 33rd wide receiver at this point in the season last year. And then as of right now, he has only had 2 scores all year, hasn't surpassed 70 yards receiving since week 4. He's been out the last 2 weeks. I mean, even if he plays against Tampa Bay, who, again, this is as good of a matchup as it gets, there's no way you can feel comfortable starting him. I mean, I don't know if you would, but I don't.
Yeah, you're right. You can't roll with him right now.
No. Other than that, yeah, Spencer Ware is a running back one moving forward. Same with Travis Kelce, who I still love for you know, getting ejected now twice in his career because he's such a hothead. So let's move on.
Have you been watching his reality show? I feel like I should have been watching that as a reality expert, like you labeled me earlier.
Yeah, you are expert. No, I have not.
Did you even know he had one?
No, I did not.
he's got a reality dating show. It's called Catching Kelce, I think it's called. And the premise of the show was that there was like 50 girls, one from each state. So this is so stupid.
God.
But I might have to go back. I wonder if it's on Hulu. I'm going to see if I can catch up. I'll report back on this later.
Please do. We'll all be waiting on pins and needles for this. Let's move on to our next game. The Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals trying to come back from not only a tie, but then also losing a close one to the New York Giants in week 10. Buffalo, you know, coming off their bye week, 4-5. You know, just what do I need to really talk about in this game? I just, you know, I guess Shady. So Shady should be making his return after, you know, he made his return the week prior, but he should be making his return in terms of full health. He's still a top, you know, 10 running back going forward. Not much of a status update on Sammy Watkins. I know we've seen a few kind of reports on him, but I don't think he's going to be ready this week, nor should I think he would be ready the week after. He's gotten in a little bit of practice, but
But I think the earliest we could possibly count on somebody like Watkins returning would possibly be in week 12 against Jacksonville, which I still wouldn't be interested in. The earliest that you could possibly play him again, if he returns, is in week 13 against Oakland, which is an amazing matchup if you can wait that long. I think he is worth an add if you are in need of some high upside. Other than that, I just don't think that he's the if you're kind of debating on who to pick up on the waiver wire, which have already kind of ran. But, you know, if you still have guys like Thomas Rawls available, if you still have Derrick Henry available, if you have, God forbid, if you have CJ Procise available, you know, guys like that, I would still move that in that area, or even Deion Lewis's area, rather than going to Sammy Watkins at this point. But anything you want to take away from this game? That's pretty boring, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not touching anything on Buffalo. I like Tyrod Taylor, but I'm not playing him in this one. Cincinnati's a decent defense. It's in Cincinnati. It's got no receivers to throw to right now. I'm not touching anyone on that side of the ball. What are you doing with Cincinnati? Where do you stand on Hill and Bernard?
I stand on both of them are flex plays, and there's no other way to look at it. They both will continually eat into each other's value. It all comes down to game script. There's the only thing that you can ever bank on with this team is that Jeremy Hill will probably get the red zone looks and inside the 10 looks. But you still just, you don't know. And specifically in this game, I would assume that it's more of a Jeremy Hill game, but you don't know, you know, I mean, it's always going to come down to whether the game script allows for both of these guys to, you know, kind of get implemented into the offense. You can pretty much guarantee that both of them will get double digit touches each game. But, you know, even for the year, I mean, Jeremy Hill only has 20 rushes inside the 20 yard line. He does have 5 touchdowns on those 20 touches, which is an amazing conversion rate. But at the same time, only 20 all year is just not, it's not enough for us to bank on. And still Gio Bernard has gotten 15 inside the 20. So you can't really bank on, you just can't bank on either of them really exceeding what we already know they'll get. So yeah, they're both flex plays for me, you know, the rest of the way. I would not be particularly happy if I had either of them on my team. This week in particular, I have both of them ranked back to back like I usually do, which is 22 and 23. Again, running back 2 flex area is about where I'd have them each and every week.
I'm a little bit higher on Hill. He's been really good the last 3 games. He's had, 168 yards, 76 yards, 46 yards, a touchdown in all 3 of them. I like both of them, but I'm more confident in Hill to get the fantasy points these days. I'd start Hill with some confidence at this point.
Well, I was more talking for the rest of the season. In terms of Hill, this week, I love him this week. I mean, the Buffalo defense is not very good against the run. You know, they gave up over 200 yards to Jay Ajayi earlier this year. They also gave up, I believe, Todd Gurley's only 100-yard combo game and touchdown. So there's something to be said for that. They gave up over 100 yards to not only David Johnson, but also to James White and LeGarrette Blount. That combo, they gave up 100 yards and 3 touchdowns to Matt Forte. I mean, this is a Buffalo defense that certainly has openings for running backs. So, yeah, I love him. I love Hill for this week in particular. I thought you were more meaning the rest of the year. The rest of the year, I guess we can take a peek at their schedule here. At least in week 13, they get San Fran, which is amazing. Then they get Detroit, Green Bay, and Washington in the fantasy playoffs. Not terrible schedule. Green Bay is the only one that, I mean, they used to be an elite run defense. Now it's kind of like, you know, question mark, kind of like CJ question mark K. We don't really know what's going on with them. Actually, I completely whiffed on their playoff schedule. I read off Chicago's. Disregard that. They get Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Houston in the last 3 weeks, which, you know, Cleveland's nice. Pittsburgh's okay. Houston's also not very good against the run. So still a pretty decent schedule the rest of the way for the Cincinnati backs. You know, again, running back 2 flex plays. Hopefully it kind of works out. But you're a little higher on Hill. Do you think that, you know, he'll end up being like, what, a top 13, 14 guy the rest of the way in standard? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Maybe around like 15, 16. But I just think, I don't know. He's inconsistent, obviously, but for the most part in this career, he's been pretty damn productive. I know Bernard eats into his work, but I think you can count on him to not hurt you at any point the rest of the way.
I want to mention. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you if you're willing to play if you're, let's say, so this is what, 4 teams on bye this week, is that right?
Yes.
So, you know, you might be hurting a little bit in the flex option potentially. Would you be willing to put Tyler Eifert in there? I could see a scenario where you had 2 really good tight ends. Like maybe you have Delaney and Eifert, or maybe you have Martellus Bennett and Eifert this week. Would you be willing to put one of those guys at flex?
Yes, and I'm so high. That was actually what I was going to mention was Tyler Eifert. I am so insanely high on Tyler Eifert the rest of the way, mainly because I think people are just forgetting about him. Not that they're forgetting about him like wholeheartedly, but I saw him on waiver wires earlier this year. I was able to pick him up in three of the 12-team leagues I am in, which is insane. Like, I shouldn't be allowed to do that. And, you know, he got 12 targets in week 8. They ended up having the bye, and then he got 5 targets last week. No, that wasn't amazing, but with tight end again being so terrible this year, he could be a top 4, top 3 guy the rest of the way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And last year he was really good, despite the fact that they had Green and Marvin Jones. Now they just have Green. They need someone else to throw to, and I think Eifert's going to be that guy really consistently.
Yeah, and Green, I mean, let's not get it twisted with Green. He has the highest target share among any wide receiver in football. So, AJ Green I had as my number 4 wide receiver coming into this year, and I think that he is going to continue what he's been doing. Like, if you're looking at the wide receiver landscape as a whole, if you have Antonio Brown, AJ Green, Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr., and then I know I'm missing one. Did I mention Antonio Brown?
You did.
Either way, if you have one of those guys, you can feel really good going into the rest of the year. I mean, all of them are, for me, just 100%, you know, no matter what, they will have a solid floor. And, like, for me, like, that's where you can kind of start winning. As far as Tyler Eifert goes, answering your question, I think that that's fine. Like, if I have, you know, Jimmy Graham and Eifert, and I don't want to start, you know, we'll say Marquise Lee, or, you know, say you have, you know, Isaiah Crowell. If you want to start Eifert ahead of Crowell, I'm okay with that. I still like Eifert a little bit this week, or Crowell a little bit this week. But if you're in that type of situation, I have no problem with that at all. If you're – that's why leagues allow that. That's why you have the flex option. If tight ends involved in that flex option, there's no reason not to do that. So, yeah, to answer your question, yes. Any other Bills pass catcher that you want to mention here other than we have guys like Charles Clay rolling around in there. We have guys like Percy Harvin. Are you interested at all in Percy Harvin or any of these other pass catchers? Justin Hunter.
Hell no. Percy Harvin is so – first of all, like, he hasn't played football in a while. He hasn't learned the offense. Well, actually, I don't know. Whatever. Like, he's the kind of guy that, like, you got to get a long touchdown or you're not getting shit. And how about for me to put him in my – lineup, he has to prove it at some point that he knows how to play football again. So I'm not, he'd have to do it for a week or two before I'd even consider putting him in my lineup.
Robert Woods, I mean, do you like him? Somebody's got to score for Buffalo this week other than Shady, right? Like,
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a low scoring game. And I don't think Buffalo's going to do much on offense. I just don't, Tyrod's going to have to do too much. He's good at, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of the receivers that you can't count on any of these guys. And Woods is banged up a little bit too. I'm out on that.
Well, I do think a secondary option, one of Justin Hunter, if you're in deeper leagues, I do think one of the secondary options will score for Buffalo this week. You know, who's guess as to who it will actually be, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was Percy Harvin just kind of getting a welcome back, like, hey, you know, here's a touchdown for you. But, you know, Cincinnati's almost dead last in the league and guarding wide receiver twos this season, so there's at least some room for, you know, possible production there.
Buffalo's wide receiver 2 has like wide receiver 5 talent. So
they do. Let's get off this game because I'm gross that we even spent 10 minutes on this. Sorry, listeners, for us even doing that. The Bears and Giants. The Giants, man, I cannot put my finger on this team ever. I don't know. I feel like they're always just hanging around. And, you know, this reminds me, I listen to a lot of Bill Simmons, right? And RIP Any Given Wednesday, which is, it's just ridiculous that's off the air after what, 11 or 12 shows. But regardless, Bill Simmons, you know, he always talks about the Giants and Patriots getting their, you know, third matchup in the Super Bowl, which, you know, if you, whether you believe that happening this year or not, is a cool idea to have actually happen. But it kind of, it's the same thing with the Giants this year as it was in those past years, that, you know, they're just kind of hanging around, and it feels to me like their defense is finally starting to get things together. They have a week this week against the Bears where, like, I'm 100% have the Giants as a startable defense this week if you want to go that route against Jay Cutler, who was hideous against the Buccaneers, gave up the worst, you know, the Buccaneers had the best defensive score last week in week 10. So regardless, I feel like this Giants team as a whole is just kind of a question mark other than Odell Beckham. So the guys that I'm going to be kind of looking for on a team in the Giants that I think is surging is Sterling Shepard, because mainly he has been getting targeted again, and we've seen him get implemented back into the offense. After multiple weeks and where he was just kind of invisible, we've seen him score two touchdowns over the last 2 games. He's gotten 6 and 7 targets in those matchups, and
he's gotten seven or more targets in two of the last three, six targets in the other one, two touchdowns in the last three, 13 receptions in there. I mean, not amazing efficiency, but he's kind of come back into the wide receiver three circle of things. And Rashad Jennings has kind of boosted some stats as well. Like, are you invested in anybody other than Odell Beckham on this team, Eli?
I was going to ask you, do you think this is finally the week that the Giants say, you know what, Jennings is whatever. He's a good backup, but he's not anything special. Let's give Perkins some more touches. Because it does seem like it's trending towards Perkins getting more and more looks. But I'm just wondering if this is it going to totally flip where Perkins gets a majority of touches? I can't take Rashad Jennings anymore. At least Perkins has got some goddamn potential.
Well, really, Jennings didn't have a great game last week. He got
he did have a great game last week. That was his best game of the year.
It was, but when you watched him, it wasn't like he was explosive out there. He just got a couple of runs that really padded things. Well, he does stink. Well, but this is the thing. Justin and I talked about this last week. I like Paul Perkins, and I think that he is also one of those kind of dart throws that you can have on your roster that just sits there. And in the case that, Rashad Jennings has gotten injured a ton in his career, there's not 1% guarantee that he stays healthy even for the next game. And Paul Perkins, the one problem I have with him is he is just too straight ahead. At least in the couple games that I've seen him this year, he has not been able to kind of go east and west, and he's not really that agile. So I'll say this, like, even if Rashad Jennings did go down, I don't think Paul Perkins would all of a sudden be a top 15 to 20 running back any given week. But I do think he would be a solid guy if he ended up getting 15 plus touches at the running back position, just because we need that right now. So answering your question, I do think that there will continue to be a changing of the guard with Perkins and Jennings, as opposed to it just being Jennings. We'll see more Perkins kind of implemented into the scheme. But in terms of him taking over, I don't think that will happen, barring a Rashad Jennings injury. But I am willing to have him on my bench to find out. The Giants get Detroit and in week 15. And other than that, you're looking at Dallas and Philadelphia the other 2 weeks. The Giants have a terrible playoff schedule for running backs. It's almost not even worth it to have Jennings on your roster if you are trying to start him on a consistent weekly basis. Anything that you want to talk about here?
Yeah, a couple things with the Bears interest me. Did we rank Jordan Howard too low? I am at 22. You're at 20. He's had a bunch of 100-yard games, and he's got no real competition.
Yeah, he's got no competition.
Giants aren't exactly studly on defense. They're certainly better than they were last year, but I think this is a pretty good matchup, and he's been pretty good this year. I think maybe we were too low on him.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about the injury, and that's why I put him down there at 20. If he didn't have any injury issues, then I probably would have made him a little bit higher, but he only got 50% of the snaps last week. Jeremy Langford ended up coming in for 35%. Kadeem Carey actually got 15% as well. So it's not just a one-man backfield. And I don't like, again, the injury thing. I know he practiced fully on Wednesday, but John Fox was pretty adamant that he had an ankle problem. And Jordan Howard has just consistently been like, no, it's not hurt at all, which I find kind of funny. We have like one, these guys on the opposite end of the spectrum. But no, I am playing them this week. I have no problem playing Jordan Howard. I think that based on this news, we haven't done a revision of our ranks this week, but I would put him as like a top 15 guy, knowing that he's going to play because he practiced in full. It wasn't just like a limited session or anything like that. The Giants run D has given up three touchdowns over the last two games. They've given up 80 combo yards to the running back position in every single game this year, actually, besides the Saints week. So, I mean, they consistently give up yards. They've given up, again, five touchdowns over the last four games. Pretty leaky running back or run defense for this team. So I like, the call that Jordan Howard's a bit too low. I wouldn't mind kind of raising him up a little bit. What about Cameron Meredith? Because with Alshon Jeffrey being out for the next four games, I love Cameron Meredith. I have him as a top 15 receiver last week. That didn't really work out. I mean, it worked out, but it didn't really work out. He caught a 50-yard, Hail Mary pass to end the first half. So I don't consider that a win. But based on the points, he ended up kind of, being able to fulfill that, ranking that I had for him. But we are seeing Marquez Wilson get a, I guess he is coming back from the IR. Do you make a claim or a bid for Marquez Wilson in deeper leagues, or are you kind of just leaving him alone?
I think I'm probably just leaving him alone. This offense is, I mean, what did Wilson even do last year? I don't remember him being all that special. Like, He's certainly going to have a good... Yeah, he had 28 catches for 464 yards and one touchdown. He's got some talent, and I know he's going to have some opportunity with Alshon Jeffrey suspended for four games and them not having a lot of experience on the roster, but Jay Cutler's crap these days. I don't like this offense other than Howard. Meredith does interest me. The only thing is, he just doesn't seem to have anything going with Jay Cutler. His good games this year were with Brian Hoyer. Three straight games is only one catch for Meredith. He's certainly got potential, and he's got the best opportunity of his career for the next four games. But so I'm certainly interested in him, but I just don't have a full amount of confidence that he's going to be consistent for the next four games.
Well, Wilson, you know, again, had injury problems last year. And this is my thing, though. This is why I kind of like Wilson, especially in deeper formats. He does have a rapport with Jay Cutler. They both are, you know, extremely close. They've played with each other for multiple years now. And if you look at the season as a whole for Wilson, no, it wasn't great. But he did have multiple weeks in which he was involved. He had week four, six receptions on nine targets, 80 yards. Week five last year, eight targets, six receptions, 85 yards and a touch. If you look at a couple of the other games, you know, seven targets here, four receptions, 100 yards. You know, five targets here, four receptions, 45 yards. I mean, there's multiple times that he did okay last season. So, you know, if you look at it from a season aspect, no, he didn't have an amazing year, but if you look at it from a, you know, week to week basis, there were a few games that he could offer some wide receiver three production, and that's more or less why I would kind of, you know, make a speculative add on him in deeper formats. I think Eddie Royal could be a winner of all this too. We already know that he just randomly will go off for two or three touchdowns. You know, he didn't do that last season, but you know, the year before he had, I believe, like a 3 week stretch in which he had like five touchdowns. Not saying that that will happen here, but he is a slot receiver. You know, I think that of anybody winning here, it's going to be Jordan Howard getting more touches, possibly even Jeremy Langford too, and then kind of a spread out situation. You know, you might see Zach Miller, you know, get a few more targets here. I definitely think Eddie Royal will, you know, assume more of a role as well, and then you might see a little bit more for Marquez Wilson as well. So I think it's kind of to be determined, but I do think Eddie Royal and Marquez Wilson are worth adds in deeper formats just to kind of find out what Jay Cutler will do with this offense. Let's move on to the Cardinals and the Vikings. Both teams, terrible offensive lines. The Vikings coming off of four straight losses now. The Cardinals barely getting out of the game against San Francisco, because again, the Cardinals hosted this game. Barely beat the 49ers. It's insane to me. But what do you want to talk about from this matchup? Is there anything? I know what I'm going to talk about, but I want to see if you're going to talk about the same thing.
The Minnesota run game. Nothing's going to change for this crap. Basically, you're starting Asiata at your flex if you're trying to get a desperate touchdown. Other than that, you're not touching these guys, right?
I don't like any of the run game. The one guy that I have held on to all year, pretty much in every format that I've had him, is Jerick McKinnon. And that's because when I watch Jerick McKinnon in space, I still see a guy that can be an absolute stud if he got any amount of space at all. Like, he just doesn't get the opportunity to do anything. The fact that the offensive line for the Vikings has been in the bottom five all year long in run blocking, there's nowhere for him to go. Right now, they actually are 31st now in run blocking. There's nothing for him to do. Like, Minnesota is not giving him any type of space. And with Asiata, he just doesn't, he does get goal line touches, but it takes him four or five times to get in there. You know, I mean, he'll convert one touchdown to every four or five, you know, goal line rushes he gets. I don't trust any of them. You know, in short, I don't trust any of them. If you had to play one of them, yes, it is Asiata, just because he's the one that's likely to get the goal line touches. But if I'm making a case for any of these guys, it's McKinnon based on talent alone, because I still feel like this is a team that needs a playmaker to get going, and McKinnon is their best playmaker they got in the backfield. The topic I was going to talk about here is the wide receiver is just trolling us on Arizona. Like, 1 week we feel like it's J.J. Nelson as the number two receiver because, you know, Bruce Arians and everybody kind of told us that. And then Michael Floyd comes out of nowhere. I mean, it just comes out of nowhere last week and has a pretty solid game. I mean, mind you, it was against San Francisco, but for some reason this whole year I have held on to Michael Floyd in multiple leagues. And I'm wondering if this is the time where I might actually be rewarded for doing that. Because, I mean, it's never been a question of skill with Michael Floyd. But, I mean, yes, he lost out in week eight, didn't get any touches, you know, no targets at all. But he's gotten six and seven targets in two of his last three games, taking out the bye week in there. 10 receptions in those. I mean, he's always had the talent. Like, are you picking up Floyd wherever you can?
I hope you do get some reward out of holding on to Floyd all year, because I'm certainly not getting any reward for holding on to John Brown all year. This is frustrating. I mean, they got four talented receivers, and Carson Palmer is having, like, what, the worst year of his career? So I don't think anything is going to change here. I don't think you're going to get consistent production from any of these guys. Like, yeah, Floyd had a nice game, but why is that going to happen again? It could be John Brown who has a long touchdown this week. Like, you just don't know. And obviously, it's a bad matchup anyway at Minnesota, the worst matchup you can pretty much have in fantasy right now. So I don't think you could have much confidence in any of these guys. Like, I'm not saying you necessarily have to cut all of them, but I'm not starting any of them with confidence no matter how well they do this week.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular matchup, you're not going to be starting any of those secondary options, I would assume. Minnesota has been pretty solid against the wide receiver position. They're just outside of Denver as the best in the league. So you're not going to be starting anybody other than Fitzgerald. He is injured, though, so make sure that you kind of keep your eye on that. If he were to sit out the game, which, again, I don't assume will happen, but, you know, we're doing this on Wednesday, I still think that Michael Floyd would be the guy that I would start ahead of the other two. John Brown is kind of the worst of all of them because, he's so talented, he's so good at running deep routes, but the offensive line for Arizona hasn't given Carson Palmer the opportunity to throw deep. And Carson Palmer is just off this year. It's kind of done with him. I think that he's at the point where we can't consider him a top 20 quarterback this year at all. Like, there's just no – what time are you going to feel comfortable starting Carson Palmer on your team? And that kind of is an extension of the pass game. Like, when would you feel comfortable starting secondary options on this team if Carson Palmer is that bad? So that kind of – I think that kind of coincides with the John Brown, Michael Floyd, J.J. Nelson, and all of them having inconsistent value, because just Carson Palmer's been an absolute mess this year. The only time that he's had good games, Carson Palmer, is against Carolina. And then outside of that, I mean, the Tampa Bay game, he had three touchdowns, and New England in week one. Other than that, you're looking at less than 300 yards, less than two touchdowns in the rest of the matchups. He did get 300 yards, no touchdowns against Seattle. But I mean, based on just kind of looking at this, I feel like he only had top 10 finishes in three of nine games, I'm sorry. And that doesn't even count the fact that he missed a game. So 3 of 8 games, he's had top 10 finishes. A guy that was taken in the top 10 in drafts. I think I'm done with Palmer. I don't know how you feel about it, but.
Yeah, it's he's got the weapons, and including one of the best running backs in football, and he's still not getting it done. He's getting older. He's lost the arm strength. He's not the same player anymore. It's pretty clear at this point.
Stephon Diggs in PPR leagues, let's see, over the last, from week 7 on, I'm trying to check on how many receptions he's actually had, but he is, 36 receptions since week 7. That puts him fourth among wide receivers in PPR formats, just behind Julio Jones. That's the other wide receiver I didn't mention, but Julio, Antonio Brown, AJ Green, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, that's where it's at. But yeah, I mean, Stephon Diggs in PPR leagues, is he a wide receiver 1 going forward?
Maybe, boy, just because the fact that I know he's been really productive and I love his talent. I just think his quarterback stinks. So I move him more to like the elite wide receiver 2 in PPR formats. But I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I think he is wide receiver 1 going forward, just based on target floor alone. If you want to look at the playoff matchups for Minnesota, they have another very good schedule for pass catchers. You got Jacksonville in Jacksonville in week 14. Then you got Indianapolis at home for Minnesota in week 15. And then Green Bay in Green Bay in week 16, I'm sorry. So I think that he has a very good schedule going forward. I am buying Stephon Diggs, not necessarily as the highest upside player, but at least has a high target floor, and that's all we can really ask for. Let's move on. I just realized we're going insanely slow on this slate, so let's kind of pick it up a bit.
Dolphins. Understatement. You're the one who's doing all the talking. I'm trying to move this along.
Yeah, I'm sorry, listeners. I just you probably know me by now based on, you know, listening to almost two years at this point. I apologize. You know, I go on tangents without even realizing. Dolphins at the Rams. Jared Goff is the new chief and commander of this Rams team after being taken number 1 overall this year. For me personally, I feel like this is just a whatever situation for the Rams. I don't have anything to take away from Jared Goff. I do not think that he is going to make a difference on this team. I don't think it's necessarily going to be worse, but I don't think it's going to be bad or better either. The Rams are throwing the fourth most
over the last 4 weeks this season. They obviously are trying to turn things around in terms of their offensive scheme, but it's not really working out. I guess kind of piggybacking off of this, we've seen a snap increase for Brian Quick. We've seen Kenny Britt maintain, you know, wide receiver two, wide receiver three production these last few weeks, and mainly for the season. Tavon Austin's kind of an afterthought, but are you buying anything that Jared Goff can offer us on the, you know, pass game kind of type of things here? Or are you just saying, you know what, this is a massive drop off for this team. I'm not going to trust any pass catcher. I'm done with it.
Well, I don't really like any of their pass catchers in terms of talent. So there's that. I'm not like a Brian Quick supporter like Justin is for no reason whatsoever. I do think that Goff will make things a little bit better. He cannot be worse.
He's got a better arm.
I'll say that from the get-go. He's got a better arm than Case Keenum.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be struggles, obviously. He's a rookie, and, you know, apparently he wasn't ready until now, which is, I don't know. I'm not going to start. I know Britt's been good, but I'm not going to start him right now, not with the rookie quarterback. I'm just going to see how this plays out for a week or two, and then maybe Britt is startable moving forward in deep leagues. Since like a wide receiver three, but I'm just, these guys aren't all that special. Britt's fine. Austin can make big plays, but he's so big play dependent, so unreliable, it's ridiculous. Brian Quick's crap. There's just not a lot of they got no tight end either. This is it's an ugly franchise. I thought Gurley was gonna be really good this year, but he's just been so whatever. I mean, he's got no games with 86 yards or more this year. That's insane. it's depressing. I mean, you got to think that the Dolphins are going to load that box big time. I think the Dolphins are definitely a top five play defense this week. Definitely stream them. I'm probably going to play them in DFS as well. So this could get ugly this week.
Todd Gurley, top 20 running back the rest of the way?
Yeah, because he just gets so many touches. I mean, there's not a lot of running backs these days that consistently get 15 or more touches every goddamn week. And that is the case with Gurley. I do think he'll pick it up. He's got New Orleans next week, which is obviously a great matchup. He's got some tough ones coming up, but I still think with the amount of work he gets, he's bound to get in the end zone from time to time. He's definitely top 20 the rest of the way.
He's eighth in touches per game at the running back position. The Miami run defense is not very good. I mean, I believe on a fantasy point per game basis, I'm trying to look it up right now as we're talking. They are league average. So, I mean, it's not like they're exceptionally great at defending the run. Regardless, I feel like I agree with you, they're going to stack the box. So I consider Gurley what he's been all year for this week, running back two, maybe running back three. I think the only saving grace for Gurley is that they get San Fran in week 16. that's like the only saving grace. You do have at New Orleans, well, like you mentioned.
And the Saints, yeah.
You have at New Orleans in week 12, like you mentioned. You do get Atlanta in week 14. So you have a couple pockets here for, at least a possibility for good games. But this, I mean, it's been bad for LA. I have really not much else to say other than that. Going to the Miami side of things, Devontae Parker. Buying him just to see if the talent outweighs what he's done this year the rest of the way, or are you just avoiding?
Yeah, I'm buying him. I believe in his talent. I do think he's also a little bit too big play dependent. I don't think he's going to get a ton of catches. Obviously, in this offense, it's going to be Landry that gets more targets, but Stills gets Kenny Stills gets some as well, but he's a little banged up. I believe in Parker. I'm not going to start him with confidence right now, but this is a step in the right direction. He finally had a 100-yard game after not having one since week two. So, Tannehill's, people give Tannehill shit, and obviously Tannehill's not exactly a franchise quarterback, but he's decent. He seems to be improving a little bit. So, I know the whatever they're called. Some of the, smarter people that in the football industry seem to think Tannehill's doing pretty well this year. So, I'm buying Devontae the rest of the season a little bit.
My thing is this, right? Like, Miami has given Jay Ajayi the third most touches per game at 25. He's averaging 25 touches per game. I mean, the Miami Dolphins offense doesn't run a fast pace, type scheme. So when you're looking at a team that automatically is giving 25 touches a game to Ajayi, you know for sure they're going to give a few to the backup running back, Damian Williams, who also is a handcuff, by the way. If something happens to Ajayi, you need to pick up or you need to have Williams kind of on speed dial, because Williams will more than likely assume a bigger role and, possibly, again, with running backs being the way it is at least a decent flex option the rest of the way. But You have Jarvis Landry on the other end of things that has the second highest usage rate or target percentage among any wide receiver in football. It's kind of hard. Automatically, you have two guys, Ajayi and Landry, taking up the majority of the touches here. It's really hard for me to bank on somebody like Parker, you know, turning it around. I will say this, though. He has been injured probably 90% of his NFL career to this point. And, you know, you would hope at some point that, you know, with matchups, after this week against LA, you have San Francisco, you have at Baltimore, Arizona, at the Jets, at Buffalo for week 16 in the championship there. The Jets game and Baltimore and San Francisco, all three of them are very good matchups for pass catchers. Maybe if there is going to be a tick up in production for Parker, those would be the weeks to have it happen. And I'm willing to buy him and put him on my bench just to kind of find out and see. So that's that. Let's move on to the Nets game. We'll make this really quick. Patriots at 49ers. Rob Gronkowski, I'm considering out for this game. I know you didn't since you ranked him this week, Eli, and Justin gave you a lot of shit for that. But
I figure he's probably not playing, but in case he does, people might want to know where we have him ranked. So if he doesn't play, then you just move up everyone up a spot. It's not complicated, people.
Regardless, you know, San Fran, the only people that you are possibly starting in this game is Carlos Hyde. That's because San Fran will run the ball even if they're down by 58 points, which I'm assuming that they would do this week. The opening line is only minus 13, so I'm taking the Patriots all day, every day, based on that line. But I guess the main thing to take away from the Patriots side is the running back situation and Deion Lewis. We talked about this last week, Justin and I did, and we didn't see Deion Lewis, although he was quote-unquote active against the Seahawks. But Deion Lewis I have as a high upside stash. I'm not starting this week against the 49ers, but I do have hopes that I see some work out of him this week, maybe 5 to 6 touches, and I'm hoping that I might be able to use him in the coming weeks. You have Baltimore, Denver, and the Jets, in the playoffs for New England. I'm assuming they're going to wrap up a bye sometime in week 13 or 14, but regardless, what are you doing about this backfield? Are you just going to say fucking on Lewis, or are you going to try and, you know, acquire him or use him in the coming weeks?
I just want to complain about LeGarrette Blount real quick. Why is he so good? Like, I know it's, I don't get it. He's not good at football, but he's like the number one fantasy running back right now at this point.
New England's offensive line is not very good either. So, you know, it's a very good question.
It angers me that Blount's been so effective. Just to correct you, Deion Lewis was activated from the PUP, but he was inactive for the game. So I was actually at that game. So
apologies. I meant active as in, like, you know, off the PUP. But yeah, I didn't mean he was active for the game. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to correct you. yeah, I think they're gonna ease him, man. He's certainly a guy that certainly could be a big asset moving forward in the coming weeks. I don't think you can rely on it at this point. I think this, even when he's back, White's still gonna get some looks because he's been fairly productive in the passing game, so whatever. Fuck this game, man. San Fran blows. The only thing that's interesting, like you said, they're going to get down big and early, and I think that could mean Jeremy Curley has sneaky fantasy value in this game. I know he's not exactly that good, and Kaepernick's not fantastic, but Curley's been decent this year. He's had a couple games with he's had 3 games with 7 or more catches. He's had 3 touchdowns. Do you think he could get a lot of garbage time work in this one? Because I think that he might be pretty productive in this one.
In theory, yeah. I mean, Kaepernick's been a top 12 quarterback the last, you know, 3 weeks here. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But, you know, I assume that that's good in theory. I don't mind playing Curley in theory. I, you know, have him as what, a wide receiver 4 or something on my ranks this week, if I ranked him at all. I'm not excited about it if I'm answering that question, but in terms of the running backs, you want to know the reason that LeGarrette Blount's so good is because he's gotten the second most carries in the red zone of any running back this year. And, you know, that's all you can really ask for, I suppose. When you have much opportunity, that's really why. You know, I mean, if the Patriots were not getting in the red zone that much, then it'd be one thing. But Blount has, you know, consistently been given, you know, if we go inside the 5, he's also second in touches there, barely behind Melvin Gordon. But Melvin Gordon's leading all running backs in touchdowns, and LeGarrette Blount is, you know, quickly approaching him. You know, he has 10 touchdowns inside the 5-yard line. That leads, he has 7 touchdowns inside the 5-yard line. That's second to only Melvin Gordon. And that's, you know, that's why he is consistently, you know, being in the top 10 among running backs each and every week, because he just is given the opportunity. Let's move on.
Eagles and Seahawks. Seahawks coming off their massive win, and the most notable, you know, transaction from this game is Christian Michael just getting, you know, I think that he's getting screwed here, but regardless, I've always been a C Mike kind of apologist. He got released, quickly picked up by the Green Bay Packers, who we all know needs a running back. Also, the Minnesota Vikings made a claim on Christian Michael as well. So I think that that is very important to note when looking at Michael's value going forward. The Green Bay Packers have already mentioned that they are not going to give him a massive workload this week. So, you know, C Mike, regardless, I don't think he's droppable quite yet, even though you might have already dropped him once you saw that he got released. Don't do that. Make sure that you kind of keep him on your roster in case. But in terms of this game, Thomas Rawls is 100% to play this week. He practiced fully today, Wednesday. But we did see CJ Procise just kind of take over against the Patriots. Had his best game of the season. We already saw the targets and the, you know, not only the touches and the targets going up, but we also saw the snap percentage going up. You know, it's hard to really bank on these two running backs the rest of the way. But if I'm picking between Procise and Rawls, I'm going Procise. And that's because I think that this Seattle team is going to turn into more of a pass-heavy approach. Russell Wilson is getting better by the week, and it's noticeable when you watch him on the field. But this is going to be a more pass-centric offense. So CJ Procise is a pretty solid-sized guy, 6 feet, 220, and is a phenomenal receiver out of the backfield. Has some pretty good chops inside the tackles as well. But, you know, 24 touches, you might not expect that each and every week, but 15 touches a week in a pass-centric offense, I'm willing to buy that. And in PPR formats, I think he's a running back too moving forward. Rawls, I'm not banking on quite yet until we kind of see.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you on that one. Procise was so dynamic last game that he's going to get a ton of work again this week. And there's no need to throw Rawls into the mix too much in this one. I'm sure he'll get some work, but I don't think he's going to go back to getting the like 25 carries a game like he did, you know, during his stint last year. So certainly a guy that I'm interested in moving forward, but Procise has certainly earned himself a lot of looks in the coming weeks.
I do want to mention Doug Baldwin. From week 12 on last year, at least in 2015, he was not just the number one wide receiver in fantasy. It was not close. Him and Antonio Brown were kind of close, but other than that, nobody was sniffing the production. Doug Baldwin had 185 points from week 12 on last year. We saw him get 3 touchdowns last week. I'm starting to think that this might just be, I mean, it might be a little bit early here, but is Doug Baldwin a wide receiver one the rest of the way, banking on kind of this offensive line being so terrible that Baldwin is kind of like the safety net, and they have Jimmy Graham there, they have CJ Procise there. Like, I'm considering Doug Baldwin at least a wide receiver two going forward. I'm willing to buy him wherever I can. They have Green Bay, LA, and Arizona in the playoffs. Doesn't really scare me much. What do you think?
Apparently, I'm an even bigger believer in Baldwin because I have him number 9 this week, the highest of the ranker so far. You have him number 17, the lowest, so...
Listen, everybody's playing Baldwin this week. That's not analysis, okay? Everybody's playing Baldwin. There's no analysis given there. I'm talking about the rest of the season. You do have him 9th, though, which is kind of... I have him 17. It's making me look like a piece of dog shit. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you are a piece of dog.
Players to watch on the ESPN player page, by the way, is Christian Michael among the rushing leaders of this game. So ESPN needs to update their scoreboard.
All right, tough guy.
Eagles.
Talk shit about ESPN.
Anything to talk about with the Eagles other than them just absolutely trolling us at the running back position?
Yeah, well, this is obviously a bad matchup. Bad Seattle is not a good matchup for any of these guys. What do you make of Sproles and Matthews? Are they both decent flex options or something? But, I mean, I feel like I know Matthews has had a monster game, but for the most part, he's been pretty pedestrian. And Sproles, you know, he gets work, but not enough that you can start him with confidence week to week. But I know if this was more of a neutral matchup, would you start both of them?
No, I wouldn't. The thing that pissed me off the most about the Eagles against the Falcons in week 10 was Wendell Smallwood getting involved. I knew that Ryan Matthews would get involved a bit, but Sproles got 80% of the snaps in weeks 8 and 9. And then all of a sudden in week 10, we're seeing Ryan Matthews just jump all the way up to, you know, 35% of the snaps. Darren Sproles got 40% instead of 80%. And then Wendell Smallwood comes out of nowhere and gets 25% of them. Like, that's what really upset me about the whole entire running back situation there. If I'm looking at running backs this week on the Philly side, I'm definitely going to be going Sproles. He's continually getting more work in the pass game, and that's all I can really ask for from this team. Ryan Matthews is going to be inconsistent week to week, but he does get the goal line touches, so it's kind of a
It's kind of the same thing as Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, except for it's a little bit more extreme in the sense that Sproles is taking on more of a role inside the or from 20 to 20, as opposed to Giovanni Bernard, who kind of seeds a lot of the work in between those areas. So I think that Sproles, regardless, I mean, he's gotten, you know, what, 26 targets the last 3 weeks. That leads the Eagles other than Jordan Matthews. So, I mean, you can at least in PPR leagues bank on him being a running back two for you. With Matthews, though, I'm not comfortable starting him this week. And, you know, if you want to look at going forward, they have Washington in week 14. I definitely like that matchup. Then they have Baltimore and then the Giants in week 15 and 16. Not amazing matchups here. So, Sproles is the guy I would buy the rest of the way.
What do you make of Jordan Matthews? He's been really good at PPR the last 3 weeks, but you know, he's not scoring a lot of touchdowns, and it seems like Carson Wentz has taken a step back lately. You starting Matthews at the wide receiver 3 spot right now, or are you going to avoid it for a week or two?
No, I like Matthews. He consistently has a high target floor. Does he score a lot? No, but he's still fairly young, 24 years old. He's gotten 26 receptions over the last 3 weeks. Only one score, like I said, but he's still a top 20 wide receiver. Over the last 3 weeks, I think that will continue as the season goes on. So not much to really say. I think that he's just a safe floor wide receiver 2-3 option. Let's move on to the Packers and the Redskins game. This is the Sunday night matchup. The Redskins are like, is the NFC East the best division in football?
No, it's not. You're forgetting one division that has 3 playoff teams in it.
Does the NFC East not?
If the season ended right now, I don't think would all three
teams make it? Would. Yeah, the Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Redskins would all be in.
Okay, well, I'm thinking that the AFC West is the best division because the Chiefs are 7-2, the Raiders are 7-2, and the Broncos 7-3.
Are the Chiefs only 7-2? That is so garbage. Yeah.
Something like 19-2 in their last 21 regular season games, something along those lines. I'm not far off. It might not be exactly right, but it's kind of crazy how good they are in the regular season.
We didn't even talk about that with the Bucs-Chiefs game, but the Chiefs are 4-0 at home, and the Bucs are 3-1 on the road, which means that the Bucs for this season are 1-3 at home. No, 1-4 at home. So that's awesome. But regardless, give me your takeaway from this Packers-Redskins game, and what do you want to do about this running back situation, or just really the Packers in general?
Yeah, I'm really interested in what you think about the Packers situation. I just feel like I know Ty Montgomery's been good, and he's got running back eligibility now, but how many carries are they really going to give him? I just feel like James Starks is like going to be pretty good this week. It's a good matchup, and he's actually a running back, so I think he's going to get a ton of touches. I know they just picked up Michael, but is he really going to get a lot of work this week? Probably not, like you said. So I think James Starks is not a must start, but I feel like he's going to have sneaky value this week.
Yeah, only 9 touches for Ty Montgomery last week with James Starks returning. And then Starks played probably 70% of the snaps, if my mind serves me right. He played 55 snaps. I believe it was out of like 71 or so. But he got 75% of the snaps. He ended up getting 10 touches, which is obviously one more than Ty Montgomery. Montgomery missed practice today with another illness, which, you know, the sickle cell trait problem. I don't know if that's kind of something that has to do with this illness. It said on the report that it wasn't, but I don't really trust that. But yes, I do like Starks this week. The running back position against Washington has been a bugaboo for them this year. The Redskins are giving up, it looks to me, like, the 10th most or 9th most fantasy points per game to the position. They've allowed 11 scores on the season. Matt Asiata ended up scoring last week against them. Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill scored in week 8. Both of them did in week 8 against them. Zach Zenner scored in week 7. Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles combined for over 85 combo yards in week 6. I mean, just on and on, the Redskins have kind of been getting hit against the running back. So I do like starts this week more than Ty Montgomery. And with C-Mike being acquired by the Packers, I think Ty Montgomery went from being a wide receiver 2 in PPR formats to being more of a wide receiver 4 in regular and PPR formats going forward, just because the workload I think is going to be inconsistent. And he's, you know, when he was just a wide receiver, we didn't even start him. He wasn't even on teams. He was on waiver wires. So I don't think that he is somebody that we can bank on going forward at all. And I do like C-Mike with the Packers, because they need somebody to run the ball consistently. Do I think that he's going to overtake James Starks completely and it's going to be just like 80% for Michael and 20% for Starks? No, I do think it's going to be more of a 60-40, you know, maybe at best 70-30 split in favor of Michael. But I am a little worried about Cobb. I'll say that in that sense. I think that he is, you know, still continuing to, you know, deal with injuries, and he's not playing to his full potential. He hasn't the whole entire year. He's consistently dropped in touchdowns over the last couple of years. Now we're seeing him drop in just multiple different facets of the game now. I mean, the last 2 weeks he's been unstartable. Only 6 receptions over the last 2 weeks. He's kind of saved us from week 6 to week 9 with touchdowns in each game. But other than that, he is a wide receiver 3-4 at best. And get this, Devontae Adams is your number one receiver in PBR formats over the last 3 weeks, since week 7. Pretty insane, but that's the case. Over 400 yards receiving in that time, and 35 receptions, 3 touchdowns as well. So just take that for what it's worth. That Devontae Adams is kind of caught up.
I was just gonna ask you. You have him ranked 26. I have him 22. Would you be higher on him if he? I mean, they have Nelson, Cobb, and Adams. Is it? Do you have Adams ranked so low because you just think there's a lot of mouths to feed, or do you just not fully believe in Devontae Adams?
It's a little bit of both. I probably would not mind if somebody gave me the argument that he should be 5 or 6 spots up, to be honest with you, especially with Randall. If Randall Cobb doesn't play this week, then I think that Adams is going to get even bigger of a workload. And, you know, Josh Norman more than likely is going to be on Jordy this week, which means that they're going to end up throwing more to, I mean, Devontae Adams is getting the safest target floor of anybody on the Packers at this point. Other than Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams is the only other guy that we can kind of bank on week in and week out. I mean, he's ended up getting 9, 8, 14, 16 targets over the last 4 weeks here. 3 touchdowns in those last 4 games, 70 or more yards in 3 of the 4. The guy is continuing to produce, and this isn't against just terrible defenses either. I mean, Atlanta is, you know, definitely has room to grow, but I mean, they're not terrible. Chicago has been playing better of late. Indianapolis is terrible, but Tennessee isn't terrible. I mean, he had 156 yards against them. So I think that Devontae Adams, you could make the case, should be a little bit higher on that list.
I don't know why this bothers me, but can the Packers ever have a good tight end? That's been so long since they've had a good tight end. Like,
you talked to people prior to the season. Jared Cook was supposed to be. I mean, I told everybody not to draft him, so hopefully nobody did.
I know I shouldn't feel bad for Aaron Rodgers because he's got 3 pretty good receivers and he has Olivia Munn, but get this guy a tight end, man.
Agreed. On the Redskins guide, I just want to say Matt Jones was a healthy scratch last week, not a inactive because of injury or anything like that. They are starting Rob Kelly, and he did fine. I mean, he had over 90 yards. I don't know what else to tell anybody other than Rob Kelly has this job. He is going to probably be a running back 2 flex option the rest of the way. Chris Thompson will continue to kind of eat into the workload there for the majority of the season as a, you know, running back 3 flex option in PPR formats. But DeSean Jackson should return this week. Jameson Crowder is still a wide receiver 2-3 in PPR formats. Jordan Reed is going to be a tight end 1. There's not much really other to say on the Redskins other than Rob Kelly is the starter there. Matt Jones is going to have to earn that role back if he wants it.
It's almost as if someone was really smart at the beginning of the season and told everyone that Matt Jones is not that good at football. Well, that was me.
I think Justin was just a denial. But all right, last game, Eli, we made it. Almost made it. Texas and the Raiders in Mexico.
Nice pronunciation.
I know, right? I tried to be a little Hispanic there. Obviously, I failed miserably. But let's see here, man. The Raiders, first and foremost, 7-2 this year. There's not much to really say on the Raiders side. Like, you know who you're starting, but I do want to say AJ Boye is going to be on the Texans roster this week. He missed last week, but he will probably return, which means that Amari Cooper is going to have to face the PFF rated number 1 guy. And, you know, we should probably expect for his production to kind of, you know, dip down just a little bit. Still going to start him no matter what. But that's really my only takeaway from this game is that I think that, you know, you take down Amari Cooper just a little bit. Overall, though, this is going to be – I think this is another fine spot for Latavius Murray, you know, a fine spot for Michael Crabtree as well. This is just another game that I think that the Raiders probably win pretty handedly.
Yeah, this is a pretty straightforward game. Like you said, we already know who we're starting. It's just weird. What happened to Will Fuller? The first two games of his career, he had 100 yards in each of them. Pretty incredible. And then since then, he's been pretty much squad duty. I know he's had a bulky knee, but still, it's kind of surprising to me. Although, you know, in fairness to Fuller, his quarterback sucks.
This is what's happened to Will Fuller. He, after those first two games, he had a hamstring injury that hurt him for multiple weeks. Then he came back too soon, and now it's become a knee problem or leg problem, whatever, you know, whichever way they want to call it. But I think that Will Fuller is one of those guys that you can stash, and you know, nobody will be buying him right now because they haven't seen him put up any points. And I think that he is just as the first few weeks of the year, he was a top 10 receiver just based on, you know, the depth of the touchdowns he was scoring. Do you believe in Brock Osweiler? No, of course you don't, but you do believe in the schedule. You know, week 14 Indianapolis, week 15 Jacksonville, and week 16 Cincinnati. I can just see that Jacksonville game being amazing, even though it wasn't the first time. But you know, I do have concerns about this Houston offense across the board. Excuse me. Akeem Hunt, a practice squad running back, came up last week, and you know, Lamar Miller was already hurt with a shoulder injury, and you know, he played the majority of the first half. He looked fine and everything, but he did get hurt again, and Akeem Hunt ended up, you know, getting nine I believe carries, and he ended up getting 60 yards or so. And you know, that's a problem because you have Alfred Blue and now Akeem Hunt back there, ready to assume a lot of the touches if you know, Lamar Miller goes down, or if they just want to kind of save him for the stretch run here. Lamar Miller is a top 15 running back this year, not a top 10 guy. And I think people would be, you know, kind of stunned if they really looked into his stats because he just has not been what everybody drafted him to be. I'm, you know, this is one of those guys that's among the fantasy disappointments. If you didn't really, if you didn't know that Todd Gurley was so bad this year, you would be putting up Lamar Miller as one of those guys that was a massive disappointment. Only 3 touchdowns on the year when everybody assumed that, you know, him getting more touches would be a favorable position for him. It just flat out hasn't been. DeAndre Hopkins, I am still going to save for the rest of the year just because the Texans have a solid schedule the rest of the way. I mean, I don't know what to do with Hopkins here other than just ride it out. If you weren't able to trade him earlier in the year, you're just kind of shit out of luck at this point. But, you know, Hopkins is what he is. And then CJ Fedorowicz is still going to be a top 12 tight end for me the rest of the way, just because Bill O'Brien, since he took over the play calling duties, the Houston Texans have targeted their tight ends, I believe, 40% of the time on average, which is highest among all of NFL teams. So I would definitely continue to trot out CJ Fedorowicz just because he's going to get the volume alone. And you know, 2 other tight ends scored for the Texans last week that wasn't CJ Fedorowicz, but it still means that they're going to continue to target that position highly. So anything else you want to add on this game?
Nope. I think we covered it. Pretty boring game.
All right, let's wrap up, Eli. I know it was a while. Where can we find you on Twitter? What are you up to nowadays? And, you know, what reality shows do you, or not just reality shows, but what TV shows should we be interested in going forward?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. Be sure to check out the Fantasy Basketball Podcast. We're starting to get that ramped up. Me and John are going to be recording on Friday, and then Ben is going to be recording as well with someone else during the week, so check out that. You know, you make fun of me for my reality. All I watch is Survivor and Big Brother. I think that's it for reality shows.
Give us another underground.
I don't even consider those reality shows, by the way.
No, it doesn't. Not just reality. I keep saying reality, but not just that. Give us an underrated and underground Netflix show that not everybody has seen.
I mean, all the Netflix shows that are good, everyone sees, and everyone like. When they come out, everyone talks about them for a couple weeks, and then they move on.
What's your favorite one over the last year? Your favorite one over the last calendar year that everybody needs to watch?
I liked Love. That was pretty fun.
Any other ones?
I don't really watch a lot of Netflix shows, to be honest. The Ranch with Ashton Kutcher is pretty good. I like season 1. I haven't seen season 2 yet.
Give us another 2 on Radio Networking or on Hulu.
Why are you being weird?
I'm not being weird. This helps people get to know you a bit, and it gives people a little insight into you.
All right, well, my favorite show that's currently on TV airing episodes would be You're the Worst on FXX. The season finale actually aired tonight, 1-hour season finale. Can't wait to watch that. Let's see what else. There's not a lot of good stuff on right now. Pretty much, I'm enjoying, I don't think it's a great show, but I'm enjoying Pitch, the baseball show on Fox.
Are you? I haven't read that. I haven't watched it yet. I've actually, you know, meant to watch it, but I haven't done it. I'm glad that you like it because I want to actually try it out.
Any baseball show, I'd be all over it. It's, you know, they got access to Major League Baseball, so they're playing in like real stadiums. And they got real jerseys and
nice.
So that's a nice little added bonus. And like, and Mark Paul Gosselaar, Zach Morris is on it, so that's always nice. He's, you know, the actress on the show, I think her name's Kylie Bunbury or something like that. She's been really good. I've enjoyed it. It's fun. It's not like a great show, but if you're into baseball, it's a fun show.
Nice. See, that's all I asked for. It wasn't that hard. On my pop culture front, let's see. I'm still continuing to ride out Westworld. It's getting better by the week. So I'm a big HBO guy. So for sure, I'm watching that. And, you know, I continue to watch. I'm still upset that Bill Simmons is out on HBO there. I'm, you know, still really, really upset about that. I'm kind of in mourning. But if you haven't watched the first 11 episodes of that, then make sure that you get on there and, you know, get on HBO Go or HBO On Demand, whatever cable service you have or don't have. And make sure you watch those. I'm still watching Walking Dead on the consistent regular basis, and I'm still getting into Elementary as well. I always kind of stay religious watching Elementary on CBS. So New Girl has new episodes out too, which is always funny. Zooey Deschanel is always, you know, very good on there. So
that's a great show. Well, she's my least favorite character on the show. I love that show, but she's the worst character.
I don't think she's the worst character, but they just have eight. I mean, it's getting funnier by the season, as opposed to other shows where the material kind of gets worse as seasons go on. Like, the show has consistently gotten better. I know, like, New Girl sounds like a really, you know, girly thing to watch or a corny show to watch, but it's actually very, very creative and really kind of witty, just a lot of their stuff. So I would definitely...
Looking at Cece doesn't hurt either. She's impossibly pretty.
Between her and Zooey Deschanel, it's not a hard watch at all. on the sports front, again, please rate and review the show. Listen to our Off the Record podcast. It's not ours. It's Andy Singleton and Tejal Bedek. They host their show, and they have a legit fantasy doctor on there. But that's also on our podcast feed. So please rate and review both of those shows to help us out and help us, you know, go up in the ranks there. Check out friendswithfantasybenefits.com. You can check out our ranks on there every week. We also have content for baseball and football on there. Again, you know, check out Eli and John Grostadier, if I mentioned his last name right. Check out their basketball show along with Ben Brennis. Check out our baseball stuff. We have off-season baseball coverage going on. We're still continuing our baseball podcast as well. We just had who were you just on with?
Howard
Bender, you know, one of the great New Yorkers, Nyakas. He was on. We also had Yancey Eaton.
Your accents have been terrible tonight.
Yeah, I'm not gonna accent guy at all. So I don't know why I keep attempting them. But just had Yancey Eaton as well. He was on from was it Pop Goes Your World and Dear Mr. Fantasy. But just continuing all around, just continue to listen and read all of our stuff, and I appreciate it. So for Eli and myself, have a great rest of your year. Every night.